Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. It's hard to believe, Tony, but it's been almost 2 months since our last episode.
What? There's no way.
It's true. I didn't think so either. I thought that we were like just a few weeks out, but I guess we've been busy with this whole COVID thing and staying afloat and everything. So yeah, I figured it was. Well, it's time. You're usually the one. It's like, man, Patrick, let's podcast. And I'm just like, yep. And then I forget. I'm terrible.
Well, Patrick, as they say in politics, it's your fault. I blame you.
It's always your fault.
Yeah, and that's really the message right now for anyone listening is just tomorrow, whenever you're out and you see somebody, just look at them and be like, it's your fault. I blame you. And walk away.
Just point a finger and walk
away.
There's
no responsibility for anything. Nope. Just it's your fault. See you.
Always.
See you later. Yep.
Hey Tony, I do have some news. I forgot to put this on the agenda here, real quick. But I'm going to get a new phone.
Uh oh.
So I have a OnePlus 6. Now the OnePlus 6 only has updates for like 2.5 years, 3 years, and so it's coming to the end to when the updates are going to be stopping. So I'm going to get a new phone so I can continue to get at least security updates.
Look, who cares about privacy? Just get. Go to the like Google store and get the Google Fee. Just get the Moto G stylus like I have. This phone is dirt cheap and it's great.
Oh,
like I know because it's like a Google Fee phone. They're controlling me in my sleep and everything.
Yeah, of course.
And I understand that. No, it's actually one of the best phones I've ever had and like one of the cheapest.
Well, Tony, I care about my status, so I'm going to get a way more expensive phone than that. I'm going to get the Google 4A. That's what I'm getting.
I don't even know what that means.
So the Google 4A is
the Pixel?
It's a Pixel. 4A? Yeah, it's a $350 phone. $350 phone, but guaranteed updates for 3 years. And unlike a lot of people, I have come to look at my phone as a tool and not something that represents or identifies or is an extension of myself. It's just a tool, like a hammer or a screwdriver.
I agree. And all joking aside, in the last few weeks, I've ran into adults, not children, adults who have professional jobs who said that they haven't been able to sleep and they're stressed out. And they're stressed out about all these different things. And I'm asking them, you know, like what happened? They're like, well, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night and I check my phone.
Oh gosh, no!
And I'm like,
man.
I'm like, if you don't realize right now that every app and everything built into your phone is designed to stimulate your brain, I don't know if there's any way to help you. Like what I recommend is that you put your alarm on your phone, and you can actually shut your phone off most of the time. Your alarm will still go off, or you can put it in airplane mode, and then move your phone so far away from your bed that you cannot casually just grab it. That's what I do. I put my phone on a table that I can't grab unless I actually swing out of bed. And I do that because I don't want the phone in case I forget to shut something off to wake me up. I don't want any lights to come on. And I was just like, I talked to this one person and I'm like, look, you're not going to get any sleep if your brain it thinks that there's updates and notifications. Like your brain will wake you up to check those because you're caught in this like cycle.
Yep.
So put your phone away, turn it off and put it away.
Yeah. I read this a few years ago. I read the book Irresistible by Adam Alter. And I got to say for everybody out there who wants to read a book about technology and addiction, this is not the book to read. It's pretty terrible actually. But he does talk, I mean, it really is, but there are some good things in there. And one of the things he talks about is like the social media apps, like you were saying, they are meant to keep you on that screen for as long as possible, like giving you those dopamine hits, like of reassurance and showing you images that are disturbing or thoughts and opinions that are disturbing to you because you want to see like, well, how do people react to this? How do people handle this? these situations or these people. I charge my phone in the bedroom, but it's face down and it's on the desk, which is on the other side of the bedroom, not far away, but I would have to get out of bed and walk over to get it. And I just don't do it. The only time I sleep with my phone by the bed side, and this is Indiana, in case we're having heavy snow and there might be a chance where we have to call off school. And that's it. That's the only time that I keep it there. And usually I set my alarm to get up really early that day anyway, just to be sure, but that's it. That's it. Or unless there's a family emergency.
I would say it's better to set your alarm to go off at 4 a.m. if you need to check something than to tell your brain you can wake me up anytime to check something.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I would agree. I would agree. Yeah. So I don't have any social media anyway. So, but I just think that's really unhealthy. So
let me tell you where I'm at with my social media. So,
go for it.
Tomorrow I completely close out my Twitter account. Yep. And nice. I will never, ever use Twitter again. I did the thing to download the data today. I don't have a lot, but I'm just waiting for it apparently to be available. But if it's not available in the morning, I'm just shutting it off.
Yeah.
And, I'm still on Facebook Messenger, but not using Facebook at all. So, I did link up some stuff cause I have this like Facebook page and I have been posting blog posts and stuff there, but it's not really a big deal, but I don't interact on Facebook at all. I removed the app completely from my phone. I actually removed the Twitter app and all the other apps from my phone a long time ago, but I have Messenger because it is the only way that my parents can, video chat with my child. They can't use anything else consistently. And I'd almost want to send them that stupid Facebook window thing.
Or the portal.
So I can just get rid of the app. The portal. Yeah, so yeah. Just get rid of the app. But as soon as the pandemic is over, I can move into possibly adjusting the Messenger. But still have so many friends overseas that only use Messenger or WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And that's really been the linchpin. But I think that's okay because, like, I'm not having any conversations. Like, when I use Messenger, it's just to arrange a call. We do the call. We hang up. Yeah. I don't find that to be a problem for me. But all the other apps are gone. I occasionally, if I need to go through some kind of a subreddit for something at work, like, there's a big subreddit for Meraki users for Cisco.
Yeah.
I'll install Reddit just to go through articles because it's easier, and then I'll just remove it. But for the most part, it's all trash, and I don't want it around anymore. So I'm just cleaning it out. And I have to tell you that it's kind of like when I first moved to China and everything was blocked. I just feel better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I scroll through Reddit on a daily basis, just the front page, and I'm getting really tired of that. I used to watch it just for kind of funny memes, or like you said, looking for a particular subreddit, like about the PlayStation 5 or about particular video games or particular sporting teams. But I'm getting really kind of tired of that. I sometimes end up shaking my head and just having to put it down. And
another thing that I've done is with YouTube is I've signed out of YouTube. Unless I need to upload a video, I'm signed out. And by signing out, the experience is pretty much benign. But if you sign in and it starts figuring out what you want to watch, it just keeps feeding it to you.
Yeah.
And I do like some stuff on YouTube. And since I'm a cord cutter, I do watch stuff on YouTube for entertainment. But what I've done is I kind of go through and just subscribe to stuff. And then when I log in, I pretty much just use my subscriptions.
Yeah, same.
Which is kind of just like subscribing, like using channels that you might watch on Hulu or something like that. That's kind of how I see it. But I don't chat on YouTube. I don't comment. There's no social engagement. So that's also been good. And my wife's actually pretty good about just like, hey, you're on YouTube, get off.
Yeah.
Because I can get sucked in. So
hold on here. I've got to help my wife. She can't get her soda bottle open.
Tell her to use a really sharp knife.
Oh, I got sweaty hands. I'm having trouble, folks. Okay, check it out.
Man, that was a cool sound.
Thanks. I put it right up against the microphone. Oh, just the best. Just the best. You know what else is not so... You know what else gets me going, grinds my gears, Tony, besides social media, is WordPress.com's new block editor. It's not new. They've been trying to get me to use it for a while now, but now they've made it even harder. Like, you have to consciously say, I know I want the classic editor. And so I thought, you know, about a month ago, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a really good shot. I'm going to, you know, why not? And Tony, I'm telling you, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan. And
I've been using it for a few months.
Okay.
It's pretty bad.
Here are the problems I have, and then I'll hear your problems. But first, I want to talk about what I like that it's very sparse. I like that I can use keyboard. I can put in keyboard commands like backslash and then type in the type of block I want. And then I can choose from those, like backslash image. And then they have a bunch of image blocks that I can pick from. I like some of this stuff. Backslash list. Rather than going and have to hit like a bullet point or something like that. I like some of these things. But it's so buggy here. So I wrote a post on it and I said schedule, and it scheduled it. And then the next day I was like, oh, I was going back and just looking over it. And I was like, man, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about that. So I want to edit that. And so I go to edit it and it says, oh, you can't edit it because it's scheduled. You need to make it a draft. And I was like, okay, fair enough. So I make it a draft. I'm editing. And after about 30 minutes, it goes, oh, I'm sorry. None of this was saved because it's still scheduled. It wouldn't let me turn it back into a draft. I had to go to the classic editor to actually edit it and then schedule it. And then on another post, a couple weeks later, I wouldn't let me schedule it. Actually, it was last week. I finished a post. It was supposed to publish today at 8 a.m. It didn't because it wouldn't let me schedule it. It would say, oh, yep, it's scheduled. It's scheduled for Monday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern time. You're all good. And then all of a sudden I go in like at 10 a.m. and the post isn't on IT Babble. And I'm like, where is it at? Where's it at? So I went, I looked into the admin console, the dashboard, and there it was. Still, and so I went ahead and published it right away. But this thing, and it can be maddening sometimes. It's just going back and having to edit through it is kind of a pain. I like the idea of the blocks where you can quickly move them around. I think that's nice. But overall, I'm just not a fan of this WordPress.com block editor. And I don't think I'm alone there. So what has your experience been since you've been using it longer than me?
Yeah, so I'm kind of using a couple of different sites. And two of them, the block editor is there. I can't change it. So I've just had to adjust to it. The HTML block where you can put your own code in is horrible now.
Oh.
And it's really hard to edit it after you save it. So let's say you get out of preview and you save it and then you want to change the HTML.
Yep.
You pretty much just need to make a new block.
Oh.
It's messy. It doesn't update. And a couple times I've gone into edit, and when I save it, it just puts the HTML on the page like text. It won't process it.
Oh, no.
And that has to be a bug. There's no way that's supposed to be. And then the other thing I've noticed is when you make blocks, there's too much space between them.
There's a huge amount of space, yes.
And I don't like that. Like it's like bigger than a paragraph space. And I don't know why that is. And so, like, I like to put bylines under things. Like, I like to put my LinkedIn, for example, under an introductory video or something. And it looks like it's three lines below mm-hmm. the image or the video. And I have to really work with it because really what you need to do is put it in the same block as the video.
Yeah.
Like, and then that works. But, yeah, there's just way too much space in the blocks. And then I tried to implement some custom styles, which used to be really easy, and it was like they just didn't show up. Oh, and right. I'm like, you know, like what's going on? And it's because it seems like along with this new layout control system, they've also kind of take in some styles that you can't override anymore, not easily at least.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I guess there's documentation on it, but as soon as you want to try something, you're not going to go through like pages and pages of CSS documentation for the new WordPress. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like that kind of has annoyed me a bit. I do like how fast it is to work with images and video. That's really good.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing any kind of layout that's graphical, it's great.
It is.
But yeah, the spacing, I mean, I hit enter, you typing, just writing, hit enter. And all of a sudden it looks like it's halfway down the page. I'm like,
oh yeah,
what is going on here?
It does that with bullet points too, because if you hit enter to do a bullet point, well, that's a new block when you hit enter, as soon as you hit enter. And if you try to make a bullet point on that line, well, it turns that sentence into a bullet point. And so you have to hit enter. There's not a way just to, and then, yeah, so it looks like there's like, you've hit enter three times. It's like disconnected from the paragraph that it's relating to.
Yeah. The blocks aren't like, they can't intuit one another. So they can move around each other, but they don't really know what's going on inside of the other one. So it can get really messy. And I've moved blocks before, like up and down, and saved it.
Yeah.
But then when I actually looked at the page, it didn't update. So the blocks are still out of order. And the other thing I don't like is before, when you hit preview, it just opened a preview window. But now it's like, do you want a preview on your desktop, your phone, or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
But it's not the same kind of like pop-up as before. You've got to go back, I think, to get to your post. So I used to like to just preview, close, or update the preview window.
Ugh.
Just keep it open and hit refresh.
Man, it is.
So those things are very weird. I mean, this is all nitpicking, I know, but if you use WordPress a lot, it's like, it seems to have slowed me down a bit.
And there are teachers out there who use WordPress.com in their class. Maybe they have a class blog, or maybe they have a school newspaper, and the newspaper is on the WordPress. You know, I mean, and they might be...
It's on the internet. In the tubes.
So anyway, it's you know, you're going to spend a lot more time troubleshooting this block editor and trying to figure it out. It's definitely going to... It's not as low of a learning curve as I would like. And there are definitely some bugs and problems with it. So if you're one of those people that's out there and you're thinking about doing class blogs or doing a newspaper or something for your school, WordPress.com is still great. It's just this block editor. Just be prepared. Play around with that thing pretty extensively first. Like Tony said, it's great for pictures. It's great for multimedia. It does a great job, but actual text, it's lacking. It's lacking pretty severely compared to what it was, I think. So anyway, that's my rant. WordPress.com block editor rant is over. Over, 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 over. All right. Tony, I'm part of this listserv in Indiana. And I'm sure that you were part of a listserv when you were in Houston. And I don't know if you're on a listserv there in Jackson, Mississippi or not.
I am not yet. That is a good thing for me to look at doing.
Yeah. So the one in Indiana is great. It's statewide. It's a great community. Very helpful. About last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, we started seeing posts about Chromebook cameras failing, not working. And I didn't pay much attention to them because they were not any brands that we had. They were like Acer and Asus, and they weren't any, and if they were the same brand, it was like a different model of Chromebook, like Lenovo or an HP, but a different model. So I didn't really pay too much attention to it until last week when we had some students show up in the IT office, and they're like, our Chromebook cameras don't work anymore. And then, you know, I instantly remembered this post. And I started doing some research. And we were able to replicate it this morning. Myself and Taylor, you know Taylor. You worked with Taylor for a couple years.
Yeah.
Yep, she's fantastic. So we were able, we have some spare Chromebooks in the IT office. So we opened them up. We tried to open up the camera app, which is just pre-installed on every Chromebook. And sure enough, it failed. It was just a black screen. Nothing else would show. And then we tried it with a... with some websites, and we tried it with Zoom, and sure enough, it was just black screen. And what was really troubling was that Zoom was really working to open up the camera. Like, it just wouldn't connect to a meeting until it can identify a camera. And so it was like kind of stuck in this connecting loop. It was really bizarre. And so we started, and then this afternoon, we opened up these same Chromebooks, and guess what, Tony?
What happened?
The camera worked. We didn't do anything different. We didn't restart. We just, some of them were even still logged in. So we started doing some research, and what we seem to have found is that this is not a hardware thing, but this is an update from Chrome OS that is somehow disabling cameras sometimes on some devices.
Great.
It's fantastic. Yep. And with Zoom, what we have to do, if it gets stuck in this connecting loop where it's just connecting, 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 Zoom has a shortcut key, Alt-V, and that will disable the camera. And when Zoom doesn't think there's a camera attached, it will let the person into the meeting without a camera. And they can at least see what's going on in the meeting, and they can participate with their microphone and their voice, but they can't, you know, show anything. So they can't use their camera to be seen or anything like that, which I don't think is going to be too much of a problem for most teachers, but it's just a weird thing. I'm wondering, have you heard anything like that down?
No, but somebody was complaining today about something weird with Zoom, and I didn't really pay too much attention because my school students and teachers aren't allowed to use Zoom. So I was like, yeah, I'm not helping you. You're supposed to use Google Meet. But I now will follow up with that tomorrow and just see, because we definitely need to know if something's going on. Cause I don't know if this impacts people when they sign into Chrome on other devices. Like, it's, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I found, doing a little more digging, I found a Chromium developer's website, and they had mentioned, but this was way back in April of 2020. They said that in one of the upcoming releases that this was an issue, that the camera stability was an issue within the OS. But I don't know if it was ever resolved, because that's a developer's. You know, some things get flagged there and just never make it into the release. So I don't know what it was. I did open a ticket with Google, and they said they would get back to me tomorrow. So I don't know what will happen, but I'll keep you guys informed. It'll be kind of interesting. And speaking of online meetings, so Tony, you wrote a nice post about recording online meetings.
I made a video about how to do this. Now, here's what people are going to say. That's a waste of your time, because Zoom and Google Meet and Teams, they all record your meetings, Tony. You don't need another way to do it. And that is not true. So this is here's what occurred to me. So we were having people kind of struggling with meeting recording, because all these systems have some weird caveat. So for example, when you record with Google Meet and you're the presenter, you control the view of the meeting, and you control what audio is saved, what audio is not, who's in focus, who's not. So it's not like a person on the outside watching the meeting and recording it. It's kind of like you're filtering things, and we've had people record meetings and the teacher's like, this recording does not show anything but me and my screen. I can't see the faces of the other people. The audio is not very good. And it's just, that's kind of where this started. And I'm not really 100% sure about Zoom, but it's still going to be the same concept where the host is going to decide like what's recorded and what's not.
Yeah,
it's not going to be necessarily 100% of everything that happens.
That is absolutely correct.
Teams is the same. So I was like, okay, I've played around with doing some cool stuff with the audio before. On Apple, and I'm not going to explain what I was doing because I'm pretty sure it's illegal. But so I went in and I messed with the audio MIDI system in Apple, and I set it up so that when you're on your Apple, if you turn on the QuickTime screen recorder and you get your audio set up correctly, it will actually capture all of the audio and all of the video happening on your screen as you're a bystander kind of watching the meeting. So then I realized if somebody invited my account to any meeting, I could just record their classes on their behalf.
Yeah.
So the teacher doesn't even have to worry about recording anymore. I can just record it. And I've kind of put that out to a couple people at school, and we're going to try it. I don't think we're going to try it till after Thanksgiving, but I'm like, look, if I set up a couple of workstations that just record meetings or classes, and teachers let me know when they have a lesson that is kind of really important, or maybe they've done the lesson two or three times and they've worked all the bugs out and they want to record it. If we can start recording for them, I think we can bank better content. And the other thing is you don't have to wait for processing. This is going to save right to the machine. Like, you can record any quality you want to the machine. So you don't have to wait. You don't have to worry about the weird sharing settings or anything like that. Well, you literally just record all the stuff, and you have the video immediately available.
So I Zoom has an option where you can record in the cloud, but if you have a Zoom account, you have limited amount of cloud storage. So it's not very big. It really isn't. But they also have an option where you can save a recording right to your computer. And in rare occasions, that fails. And when it fails, it's failed. It's over. There is no recording. There's really no way to salvage it. It's gone. And Zoom is so overworked that if you try to put in a ticket for this, because we had this happen last spring, and we tried to put in a ticket to get this video, and pretty much their response was, we're really busy right now. We'll try to help you if we can, but there's no guarantee. That's what they said to us. Like, that was the response from their support desk. So having a way to back up or to record it locally on your own machine, that that sounds pretty promising. And I've never had QuickTime fail, ever.
No, and I tried it with Screencastify.
Yeah.
And I didn't have as many options. I do think you can do it with Screencastify. I'm sure you can do it with Camtasia.
Oh, yeah, or ScreenFlow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or ScreenFlow. But you do have to set up these audio devices on the Apple. And I'm assuming there's a similar way to do it on Windows 10. Basically making a virtual mixer. So that's the key. And I think that's the reason a lot of people avoid, if they watch the video, they're going to be like, I'm not going to do this. It's too confusing, but it does work really well. I've been shocked at the quality of recording I've been getting versus recording in the cloud. Like, the quality is way better.
Yeah. We've been telling our teachers to, so Zoom has to process the video, which is very quick. I think it's what they're just quickly processing it into a format that can be downloadable. And then you download it to your computer. And then we're telling teachers to upload them into YouTube, not Google Drive, YouTube.
Right.
Google Drive is fine, but it sometimes can take a very long time to process that video. Where YouTube, that's all it does. It's just a giant processing machine, and it will be viewable in a matter of minutes.
I don't know if you've been paying attention, but if you're not going to be on Google Enterprise for Education in a year from now, you're going to start running into something we haven't had in a decade, and that you're going to start running into storage limits.
Yeah,
Google is kind of. I think this whole situation actually pushed them to a situation where they were. Like, you know, we were giving this stuff away before and it was fine, but now it's really killing us.
Yeah.
So we did the enterprise upgrade, and it did improve a lot of stuff. But the one thing that we now have is we've got storage locked in. But I've been seeing notices for the non-educational, just normal Gmail.
Yeah, Google Photos.
Google Drive accounts.
Google Drive.
That they're reducing stuff. And
yep.
I think it's gonna go across the board. If you're not paying, you're not gonna get unlimited storage. And I just think G Suite for Education, if it's gonna be valuable in the future, people are gonna have to pay for it. I think we're done with the days of a free product that's good.
It'll be interesting because if we have to pay, I guarantee that we're going to take a pause and we're going to take a look at Office 365 and start comparing what Microsoft will offer us as opposed to Google.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, but yeah, that's really interesting and it's definitely coming. I don't know if it's coming like in a matter of months, but maybe next year. I wouldn't be surprised. There is I have definitely noticed a push from Google to upgrade to Enterprise. But right now it's just not in the cards for us. So, but interesting things. You know, it's definitely something to keep track of. And if you are a Google school, I think you're right, Tony. I mean, when you look at Khan Academy got crushed. Padlet got crushed. All these online services just got pounded. During distance learning last spring, and I think it's coming again. I think more and more schools are going back to distance learning. I know we are here in Indiana, and we're going to find ourselves in similar situations. Like we had some people trying to use an online PDF annotation service. And people just couldn't log into it. Like it's supposed to sync with Google Drive, but they just couldn't log into it. And you know, teachers sent them down to us, and they're like, "There's nothing we can do. Like, this is on them. They're having trouble handling their the load." So, anyway, yep. But you know what? We're not going to be using Tony. You know what we're not going to be using. We're not using whiteboard.com. We're definitely not going to use that at our school, and neither should you. And I'm not talking about just you, Tony. I'm talking about anybody listening out there. Don't use this thing. It's hot garbage.
But it sounds like such a friendly product.
It is. And it
whiteboard.com.
says whiteboard with no H. Whiteboard.com. And it's pretty simple. Like,
wait, no H?
Yeah, WITEBOARD.com. Whiteboard.com. Here, I'm going to.
That's weird.
Oh, it didn't even hyperlink it for me. Hold on here. But that's okay. Yeah. So when you go to it. And at first, I was like, oh, this is kind of neat. Hold on here. I'm going to bring it up. Whiteboard.com. At first, when you go to it, it's like there's no sign in. There's nothing. You're on a whiteboard, and you have tools. You have like a pencil. You can draw a line. You can write text. You can erase. You have different colors. I'm like, wow, this is kind of neat. Like there's no login. Man, this could be fantastic for first grade, second grade, third grade, you know, they don't have to log in. They can just work, you know, put them in small groups. But here's the thing. All you need to work on the whiteboard is the URL. That's all you need. That's all. There's no log. So once you go to whiteboard.com, you get a URL, you share that out. People don't have to log in. So you're going to have kids writing poop, fart, all sorts of other funny, funny jokes on there. And you're not going to know who it was because there's no accountability. There's nothing. It's just wide open. Anybody can get the link, share it to anybody else, and anybody can write on there or destroy. They could erase the entire board if they want to. There's nothing stopping them.
Wait, I don't understand. Hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
WITEBOARD.com. Man, my browser won't even type that. it just keeps correcting me. Hold on. Wait, so if I write on this, it's not private just to me? Or
yeah, as long as anybody with that URL can...
Oh, I see at the top.
...can edit it. Anybody. Now, you can sign in, and the only thing to sign in does is it allows you to kind of associate that URL with that account. But still, anybody can get to it, and you can open up other whiteboards. But you... What you see on the screen, that's it. You don't have any more space than that. It doesn't go on forever. And that's your only workspace. It's so stupid. There's no post-it notes. There's no flow that you can make with it. There's no, I mean, you want to, it's so
Patrick,
dumb.
There's a Slack plugin.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I didn't try that out. I wasn't brave enough.
I do. I'm trying to get the shape detection to work, but
oh, it's terrible.
It only picked up circles.
I could only get it to do squares.
Come on. That is a triangle. And why won't you recognize
it? I'm telling you, your triangles are terrible, Tony. Another thing is wait till you get to the bugs. Wait till you get to the bugs. And the bugs are like if you, I forget how to do it, but you can get it to where you won't be able to, the pen tool won't work consistently. It only draws some of the time, and then it just doesn't draw, and then it draws some of the time. It's like, so you have these lines that are broken up, or it'll just draw straight lines. The pen tool just only draws straight lines, and you can't do anything. And the eraser tool will only erase certain areas for some reason. It won't erase other areas. And then if you say erase the whole canvas, well, that's definitely not going to work. That's definitely not going to work at all. I mean, there's some nice things. Like if you got the pen tool on and you hold down the space bar, you can just draw with like your mouse. I like that. That's like clever. That's really good. But too bad this thing has no purpose. Like the text tool, you can't change the size of the text. You can't make it bigger or smaller, and you can't move it. There's no selection tool.
A middle school person's computer science project.
You know, it sure feels like it. I saw this on Free Teachers for Technology, and Richard Byrne, he doesn't really review things. He just kind of puts stuff out there. And I saw it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. He turned me on to LucidSpark, which I like a whole lot, a whole lot. You can read the review. And so I was like, I'm going to try this out. And it is hot garbage. I mean, it's awful. Yeah, I don't know. Even in a work environment, I don't see how this could be useful. And then when you inject it with teenage immaturity, there's only one use for it, and that is to troll people. That's it.
Well, I've drawn 7 or 8 triangles at this point, and it still doesn't understand any of them. I don't know what I have to do.
I can't get it to identify triangles either. I can only do circles, and I could do squares. And I only did square once successfully. It only said, oh, that's a square, and turned it into a square. But circles, it was like 50-50. It's so bad. It's so bad. I like kind of the minimalist, but there's no selection tool. So let's say if you want to, you type something and you want to move it, you can't. You have to delete it and then type it someplace else. It's terrible. It's so bad. This thing is so bad.
Well, I'm glad it's out there.
It is. You know, it's good to have something terrible and look at something terrible and be like, that's terrible, and understand why it's terrible. And no, it's terrible because of these characteristics. And if I see those characteristics in other products, I know I'm not going to like that product. So, yeah, there you have it. There you have it, folks. Whiteboard.com. Stay away from it. Go to LucidSpark. Go to Padlet. Go to Wakelet. There are so many more out there that are worth your time. So many more. So many more. But,
right.
Yeah, sorry. I was another rant. Gosh, I'm kind of ranty today. Sorry. Hope people don't. I'm not normally a negative person. But anyway, I'm going to put on here in the whiteboard.com in the show notes that Tony is incapable of drawing a triangle. So hold on.
Yeah, I can't. I did like 12 of them. I can't get a single triangle.
There it is. There it is. Immortalized in podcasting forever.
So, I have failed.
Don't worry, Tony. We at IT Babble still welcome you with all your fit, because it's not your fault. It's the triangle's fault.
And surprise, I don't know if you got the email, but we may have an opportunity to record Omar in the next week or so.
I saw that our school is getting ready to distance learn, so I've been pretty inundated with schoolwork emails. But that is fantastic. That's awesome. We got to get the Gosen on here. We got to get the Omar Gosen, the OG co-founder, IT Babble, get him back on there.
He might do it. He hasn't decided yet, but he may come out of his cave.
It's okay. He won't read the agenda anyway. He never read the agenda.
He's never going to read. He just needs to get online and just, you know, just answer questions.
That's it.
Do we have another topic, or was that?
I think that was it. I mean, if you have something you want to talk about, we're right around the 40-minute mark here, so I don't know.
Oh, I don't have enough information yet, but I decided to upgrade my laptop to Big Sur to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so far it hasn't been great. And my battery now only lasts like 2 hours instead of 8.
Oh,
so, more to come. More to come.
I don't know
why. It was overheating today just with like Google Chrome open and everything else closed.
Here's
the fan on.
here's what I've noticed, because I updated over the weekend to Big Sur, and here's what I've noticed is that apps open really slow. Switching between desktops is super laggy and janky. It's not smooth or fluid. Now, I have a MacBook Pro, so I'm not talking like a MacBook Air from 4 years ago. I have a 3-year-old MacBook Pro. Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, unless this is Apple's way of like, we're going to sabotage all our non-Apple silicon devices so they have to get rid of them and update to new M1 chip.
Yeah, that could be true. Oh, and here's a little tidbit. We tried to buy some normal MacBook Airs from Apple last week, and they said, no, we can only sell you silicon.
Wow, because I noticed that. Like, they announced it, and then all the older MacBooks were gone. I mean, you can still find Intel MacBooks, but you're just not going to find them from Apple.com. You can get the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Intel.
I went out on the street with a sign that said, "I need laptops. I need laptops." So people may not get that reference if they haven't been to baseball games, but yeah. That's bad. And so we went to an alternate supplier, like a reseller that's not our Apple reseller, and they still had some in stock, and we bought a couple, and then we bought one silicon just to test. But I'm like, I don't want to buy these en masse until we know what we're getting into.
Yeah, no reviews yet. Who knows what? There will definitely be technical issues that need to be worked out. And for folks out there looking to buy Chromebooks, if you're, we just put an order in just for 10 more, just to kind of cover our bases. And we are not going to get them until February.
Oh, Patrick, I have a Chromebook loophole.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So I've successfully just ordered and received 35 Chromebooks from Dell within a 2-week period. And this is the second large order I've made with Dell. Now, here's what I did. I looked at the prices I was getting for normal Chromebooks, like you would order for kids, and they've gone up quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I took those prices and I contacted all of the reps that we use, and Dell was just the best one for us. And I said, what Chrome OS laptops do you have in this price range? Period. Nothing else. I did not ask for anything else. And there is another level of Chromebook that they never advertised to school, and that is the Enterprise Chromebook. Now, the Enterprise Chromebooks, Lenovo and Dell sell to companies, and they are in stock, and they are almost the same price now as the other ones. So before, they were never sold to schools because they were too expensive. But I was looking at some of these student Chromebooks, and they were, over $300, and I'm like, we buy these, but then in our case, we buy them, but the parents buy them from us. So we're buying them in bulk, but the parents end up owning them. But even if the parents don't own them and we were going to buy the student Chromebooks, I'm like, the student Chromebooks are about $100 cheaper now instead of $200 cheaper. And then these Dells are actually Windows 10 Latitudes that run Chrome OS. They've been converted to run Chrome OS. And we popped one open to see how they did it. And basically, they just put in a different kind of hard drive and a different kind of memory. But the point is, it is an enterprise business level laptop, and they're great. And they have loads of ports. And the only thing that we could get on this model was a touch screen, but we did survey the teachers and students, and they said they didn't care about the touch screen.
Yeah.
So everybody's different that way. But if you contact Lenovo, they also have enterprise Chromebooks. So instead of saying you want an education Chromebook, you just say, what Chromebooks do you have? And you give them some prices, like at the $275 price point, the $300, $350. I just gave them like 5 price points. And then that's what I got back. And those are in stock because people don't know about them.
Yeah.
Schools don't know about them. And school districts don't order them. And school districts are the ones that are buying up the other ones. So,
and you can get a Chromebook management license from anywhere. I mean, they don't come you know, tied to the device itself.
You know what we found, though? We skipped the management license and just packaged the GoGuardian license in, like, as an additional cost. And it was only like $7.50. And that seems to do the trick for us. We don't really need all the features of the Chrome license anymore with GoGuardian.
Well, for us, what we like about it is that they can't power wash it, right? I guess you guys could log in first and become the owners of the Chromebook. I guess you could always do that. And then set up some restrictions, like turning off developers' tools and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand doing that, but what's happened, what we've kind of figured out is with GoGuardian, if they do anything, it's recorded. And then when kids have a problem with their Chromebooks, especially if they're remote, what we just tell the parents to do is just to power wash it and then log back in, because we don't have access. The kids have been remote on and off for so long that we've kind of loosened it up so that they have more management options. And there's a Chrome remote desktop app. I don't know if you've used that, but it lets you like remotely manage a student's computer if you need to. So anyway, I do. It's not that I don't like the license. It's just that the price has gone up and we're just trying to shave a bit off. So what I'm saying is, let's say that you're looking at the Latitude and it's $200 more than you normally would pay. But if you don't need that Chrome license and you were buying that before, you could save $25 or so. So now it's only $175 more and you can get them in a few weeks instead of like a few months.
Yeah,
it could be worth it for some people. The idea, again, is go straight to the business market. Forget the education market. They're different salespeople and they're going to have different options.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That is a really good idea. Yeah, because we've been going through, you know, Google authorized vendors. And of course, they're pulling from this education stock, which has been depleted,
obliterated.
There's nothing left. I mean,
Not only that, I got a quote for a Samsung Chromebook the other day.
Yeah,
it was $1,000. I was like,
what?
Are you? Yeah, it was from an education reseller. I'm not going to name their name.
Okay.
But I was like, you're insane. Like, that's an Apple computer. There's a certain point where I can't justify the pricing of a Chromebook anymore.
Yeah.
If we could get a Surface Go and unlock it so the kids can install whatever they want, I'd rather do that and use the Office 365 Intune management system to just manage it. It's going to be a better value. I just can't justify it.
Who knows? Maybe in a couple years. You never know. And it's not just Chromebooks, Tony. We were looking for some extra document cameras because they're sold out everywhere as well. Like their stock is obliterated. Unless you want to go to Elmo USA and pay $1,200 for a document camera. And so we found some document cameras. We're like, wow, look at this. We didn't need any, but we were looking for other schools. But they were $250. They were selling it for $400. For $400, we paid $260 for them, and they were on sale at Amazon for $400. Like just total price gouging. It was across the board. It didn't matter any affordable document camera. The price had been raised at least $75 to $150, and it's just unbelievable.
All right, Patrick, we're going off the rails.
We are. We're way off the rails.
Like old people.
Yes, right. Yep. Okay, you're right. We gotta end this bad boy. We gotta end it. But I thought it was a good one, and first one in 2 months. So anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
Check us out on itbabble.com and keep on babbling out there, and we will catch you on the next podcast.